saw her from a distance as she walked up to the wall. In her hand she held some flowers as her tears began to fall. And she took out pen to paper as to trace her memories. She looked up to heaven. The words she said were these. She said, "Lord, my boy was special, and he meant so much to me. And though I'd love to see him just one more time, you see, all I have are the memories and the moments to recall. And he died for God and country in a place so far away. I remember just a little boy playing war since he was three. Lord, this time I know he's not coming home to me." Lord, my boy was special, and he meant so much to me. And though I'd love to see him, but I know it just can't be. So I thank you for my memories and the moments to recall. But Lord, could you tell him he's more than a name on the wall? Lord, could you tell him he's more than a name on the
Liberty Lounge, brought to you every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. Listen to classic country music in the Liberty Lounge to help you end your week on a pleasant note. We'll have sad songs.
I go out walking after midnight.
Happy songs.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
Patriotic songs.
There the star spangled banner waving somewhere in a distant land so many miles away.
Songs of tragedy.
Two little boys and an old family dog by the banks of a stream said one day.
Love songs.
Welcome to my world.
And good old honky-tonk music.
I'm a honky-tonk man, and I can't seem to stop. I love to give the girls a...
So join me every Friday night and just let your hair down for a couple of hours here on Liberty Lounge. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now. And we're here, and welcome to the Shooting Bench. It is the 2nd of August. This year is winding down pretty rapidly here. I've got I got to send a note out here real quick. Got a guy that, typical of, I should say stereotypical, of the type of instructors or wannabe instructors out there. And we're going to talk about this guy in just a minute. Let me send them a little note here, just right quick, so they can listen. Just gonna have him be the star of the show tonight, only without any names, of course. So hang on here just a minute. I'm still with you. Hang on. I don't do this very often. All right, here we go. All right. While I've got this up here, let's just talk about it right now. There's a guy on Facebook, and I've never seen anybody quite this arrogant. He claims that he was recently contacted by both the USCCA and the NRA in becoming a certified instructor. And the next words out of his mouth, and not to sound arrogant, but I was U.S. Army 18 Alpha, that's a special forces officer. An MTT leader, that's military training team, and a weapons specialist. Of course, weapons specialist in the Army doesn't mean a whole lot as far as I'm concerned. And then he says, shouldn't it be the other way around? He said these people contacted him to be an instructor, and he said, shouldn't it be the other way around? LOL. And I just about swallowed my Adam's apple there, and I couldn't even believe I was hearing that. And he actually got a pretty good thrashing here from quite a few people. So before we go on any farther with this, let me double check here and make sure that the sound is good and that everybody's on board here. So let's see here. Let me type that in there right quick. All right. Stay with me just a second. One thing you do not want to do, especially, I don't know if this time of year has anything to do with it or not. It seems to for me. But what you don't want to do is go swimming in a chlorine-infested pool an hour before showtime. Not a good idea. So I'm going to be, my eyes are burning. I can't believe how much chlorine they put in there these days. I didn't notice it nearly that bad when I was a kid. I don't go to public pools very often. Very, very rarely, as a matter of fact. And it's killing me tonight. I should not have done this. If I do that anymore, I need to save it for the weekends. Okay, anyway, this guy says, shouldn't it be the other way around? And as he gets raked over the coals here, he says, he said, who in the NRA contacted, or another guy said, who in the NRA contacted you? Seriously, if you want to be an instructor for either of the classes, there's classes all over the place that could take care of that for you. And then he jumps out there, why should I take classes? Apparently you don't understand what a Special Forces MTT is. Okay, you're rapidly losing me here. Then he says, I was an NRA instructor in Missouri a few years ago. I left the NRA and will never be back. And I said, that's good. The NRA nor the training community needs your attitude.
some other woman got on here and said, you clearly don't deserve the position. I hope someone mentally and physically qualified takes your place. And, of course, he deleted a whole bunch of his posts, a whole bunch of them. And his big deal, and I understand his point to a point, up until the point where he said, no, Doc, if you're talking about the, no, I don't believe, I have taken the ghost pepper challenge, and I survived, I won the challenge. It was, it's tough, there's no doubt about it. That stuff is horribly, challenging. But for Eyewash, I believe I'll pass on that right now. As tough as I might try to be eating it, swallowing it, I think that will all go right out the window if I even got in the same room with that stuff with both eyes open. Don't believe that. If you guys haven't tried ghost pepper yet, get on Amazon, put in ghost pepper, order you a little bit. It's not cheap. And when you get it, let me tell you something. It's not to sprinkle on food, okay? It's to put, you know, dip a toothpick in or put a drop on a toothpick or something like that and suck on the toothpick. See how long you can handle it. All but the most experienced chili eaters from way back are going to have a difficult time with that. And I'm not going to tell you and lie to you. I had a difficult time with it too, but I still won. I did that with some chili patins down in Southwest Texas one time. And, no, it was far West Texas, not Southwest. Anyway, they grow wild out there. These little things are about the size of a pea. There's red ones and there's green ones, orange ones and green ones. And I had never seen one before. And I went into this beer joint all by myself, and I'm sitting there, and this guy's, I don't remember how the conversation came up, but he bet me a beer that I couldn't eat one of them without drinking a beer, without taking a drink of my beer. Well, I say, oh, I'll take that challenge. Go out and pick me a handful of them. Well, that was not the smartest thing that I ever did, to tell you the truth. He went out and picked me about, half a dozen of them. And I popped them in my mouth, started chewing on them. And I'm going to tell you right now, I realized right off the bat that was not a good thing. But, being me, I was not about to let him know that I didn't think it was a good thing. But I won my beer. I drank it in one swallow and ordered another one right away. And after about a half hour, I think I finally got it washed down enough that I could talk. But I got my beer. So, all right. I haven't heard of that one, Doc. I'll have to check it out. Let's see, that ghost pepper is pretty hot. Anyway, back to this dude. He's ticked off about the fact that they're trying to sell you insurance all the time. Okay, I get that. It ticks me off too. And USCCA, I haven't got emails from Tim for a long time, and I don't know what was his special occasion today. But I got two of them. They had different titles, but they said the same thing. And it's fear-mongering about getting liability insurance for self-defense instances. All right, I understand the dangers of that, and I know some states are worse than others. But his deal that he's trying to convince everybody is that you will absolutely go to jail, need a lawyer, all these other things that are not pleasant. And I understand the concern for that. However, that is definitely not the case. It is the case when the circumstances are questionable. It is the case when you're in certain states that frown heavily on self-defense shootings. But even in some of those states, even in California, we still get stories from time to time where someone has had a cut and dried, clear cut self-defense case. No questions about it. And sometimes they were, they'd be under investigation. Tim says, well, if you're under investigation, you can bet you're going to go to jail. And that's not true. They are just trying to sell insurance. They're trying to scare you into buying insurance. If it's very questionable, they might detain you. Most likely, they're probably going to say, well, stick around. Don't book any airplane tickets or anything right away. And, we'll be in touch. And as often as not, you're the next contact you hear from them will say, we found that you're was totally justified in what you did, and there'll be no charges or whatever. So I do understand their point, but they need to say it differently. You will go to jail. You will need a lawyer. You will have to mortgage, refinance your house. You're going to have to do this, that, and the other. And they should say that these are possibilities depending on the jurisdiction that you live in, the circumstances of your case. It is absolutely not a fact, not a guaranteed deal. I can promise you that. As a matter of fact, I've got at least one story to talk about tonight of that very thing. So, back to Mr. Instructor Dude. He says NRA wants membership, or you can pay them like $300 to qualify. USCCA wants the same, and they both want to sell me some idiotic insurance. Thing is, maybe I should be testing them and see if they qualify and charge them $300. That is the epitome of arrogance. That is childishly arrogant. I have to wonder if this guy was ever an 18 alpha to begin with. Because I'll have to say that just about every Special Forces soldier that I've known, that includes SEALs and Green Beanies and Rangers, most of them, overwhelmingly, particularly the officers, are respectful. They have integrity. They're patient, tolerant. And they some of them may have had some of that when they went into the service, but they learned some of this because it is crucial sometimes to accomplishing your mission that you conduct yourself in a professional manner, not like this idiot. So I really question whether or not he was even what he says he was. I don't know. And, of course, then somebody else come on here and explain to him it wasn't the NRA charging for the classes. It was the individual instructors. And I won't spend any more time on that. But the first thing I answered was before I talked to him. Before I said anything to him, he said, shouldn't it be the other way around? Shouldn't they be contacting me? And I said, no, because I didn't like his attitude right off the bat. And then he said, get over it. Not the first time I've been contacted by the NRA to rejoin or renew my certification. Oh, they want to sell me some laugh. Well, okay, now it's different. I said, contacting you to renew is a whole lot different than what you conveyed in your first post. You said, you led everybody to believe, oh, they want me to be an instructor. They're calling me and wanting me to be an instructor. Shouldn't it be the other way around? So I said, hell, they do that for everybody. that lets their certificate lapse. You're nothing special, and the USCCA did not contact you either. So one of my friends on Facebook actually contacted USCCA and asked them about this. And their response was, let me find it here. Okay, here we go. This same gal a while ago that I told you about said, thank you for sharing this with us. We actually do not reach out to people to become instructors. If they would like to become a certified USCCA instructor, they have to reach out to us. I'm not sure of the situation and what he's posting in this in regards to. So, and I knew that already when I told him that. I told him I don't believe for a minute that either one of them then contacted anyone to be an instructor, and that's the case. I knew that. And he said, he's talking about me, and he said, somehow I believe that NRA and USCCA doesn't actively recruit or try to advertise their lame insurance in that recruitment or keep former members and instructors on file so they can recertify them. Laughable. And I said, no, that's not at all. I just don't believe they contacted you. So about that time, he deleted about half of his post here. Had never been back. I think he knows he's been outed here because everybody's jumping all over him. So I just had to share that. Now the reason I share this is not necessarily about him. If it was about him, I would mention his name. And I don't want to do that. But the yeah, Doc, I know they do, and most of that's computer generated. I'm sure you know that. And I don't know. It doesn't bother me too bad that they keep sending that stuff. You know, if I want to send them some money, I will. If I don't, I don't even open it. You know, I just throw it away. As far as I'm concerned, they're wasting a hell of a lot of funds in printing and postage to get this stuff out. You know, they could do 25% of what they do and still be a very strong presence out there, you know, to notify people. So I'm not a tremendous fan of that. I'm not the biggest fan of the NRA, period. They've done a lot of good. I've told you this several times before. I'll tell you again. They've done a lot of good. They have a good training program for beginners. And, you know, they do have decent insurance. They, you know, they've got a lot of good benefits. You know, the last 10, no, probably the last 15 years or more, they've changed quite a bit. And they've become more commercial and more about money and everything. And I realize that they have to have a substantial amount of money to do what they do. I also realize they pay a lot of their executives way too damn much money. Way too much. I've seen the financials of one of their previous presidents, and it was absurd how much money they were making. So, you know, sometimes I believe in making a good, fair, decent salary. Now, I don't mean just enough to get by on. When you're doing stuff like this, you don't need any other worries. I believe in in making, you know, good money while you're doing stuff like this. I really do. But good money doesn't necessarily mean, you know, $248,000 a year or something. That's I think that's a little overboard for what they do. And that was a long time ago. That was, I think it was $248,000, but that was back when what was that gal's name? That woman's name that was president for a while, a long time ago. I don't remember who it was, but it was like 25 years ago or something like that. So now, you know, maybe a million and a half. I don't have any idea. But that's too damn much. It's way too much. Anybody can get by very well with your travel expenses paid and stuff like that. You can get by very, very well on $80,000 to $100,000 a year. Now, if you're an entrepreneur, you work for an oil company or a construction company or, you know, whatever, Office Depot, as far as that goes, I don't care who you work for, and you're doing an honest day's work and you're making more money than that, then more power to you. But when you're making it off of donations, Marion Hammer, thank you, Doc. Yes, that's the one. She made a freaking ton of money. And when you're doing this off of people's donations, that's a whole lot different to me than going out and working. And the more you work, the better you do, the more money you make. I'm all about that. I think that's a wonderful thing. Capitalism. It's a great, great concept. But to make it at the expense of other people and then continue to send them more notices, whatever, for donations, and make $250,000 a year or more. You know, Wounded Warriors, great example. I will never send one freaking penny to Wounded Warriors again. I may send a penny just as an insult, as far as that goes. We learned our lesson about Wounded Warriors. And a bunch of those, Red Cross, you know, there's a bunch of them like that. And probably I don't even need to get into that, it just pisses me off. So I believe what probably needs to happen about this point is we probably need to go to a break. And let's see, I need to get rid of that. I don't need that to happen. There we go. I should have had all this stuff ready. I'm sorry about that. I'm just failing all the way around here. Let's try this one again. Let's see how this goes.
I'll be back. Gun control is on the rise. We make our ends meet, take what we need to survive. A shot, one kill is such a thrill. That's the way that I was raised. When I pick up a gun, I hit right where I aim. It's time to take a stand. It's time to draw the line. You better bring yours when you come to take mine. Granddaddy taught my daddy how to hunt and how to fish, how to be a man. Don't take any shit. Raised up on the good book, learned about the land. They grew what they ate, they didn't get it from Uncle Sam. It's time to take the stand. It's time to draw the line. You better bring yours when you come to take mine. So go and round up all them Yankee boys, get ready for a fight. I'll round up all my rebel friends, meet you at the Mason-Dixon line. Cause the South is gonna rise again, and we're gonna kick your ass this time. You better bring yours when you come to take mine. It's not really about north or south. It's about red, white, and blue. I'll fight beside any Yankee man if he feels like I do. We'll stand here today and we'll proudly say to the man in the suit and tie, you better bring yours when you come to take mine. So go and round up all them Yankee boys, get ready for a fight. You might have won that war back in 1865, but the South is gonna rise again, and we're gonna kick your ass this time. You better bring yours when you come to take mine. You better bring yours when you come to take mine. You can bring yours. But Mr. President, you ain't taking mine.
But we have to stop looking for salvation in this system. The system is not going to fix itself. If the system is restored, it will be restored with the hammer of patriotism, smacking this system out between the anvil of freedom and teaching this system that there is a shape we wanted to maintain, and that we have the forge of rage, and we will put that system in that forge of rage, and we will use that hammer of liberty and pound it against the anvil of freedom until it returns to the shape we want it to be in.
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
All right, we are back. I don't think we talked about this. I'm going to throw this out there and let you think about it. Some of you might have seen it. It was a federal agent. I don't think it says what kind of a federal agency he worked for. Doesn't say. It just says a federal agent. Understandably so, I guess. They don't want to get let anybody know and have people making fun of a particular agency or agent. However much. We make fun of him anyway. This was in the Orlando International Airport. And they say a federal agent accidentally shot himself. There was a gal there that said, all of a sudden I heard an extremely loud pop, which echoed throughout this area. And the, I guess somebody was there sent a Fox station a picture of it where the gun fired, leaving a mark on the sidewalk there. And they're spending, instead of worrying about the safety aspect of this, they're talking about, in the story, describing what people thought they heard. One of them said, when I heard it, I knew it was a gunshot, but then when I saw people not reacting, I started to think maybe someone dropped a bucket from high off of a ledge. Really? Would that be your next thought if you knew it was a gunshot? Oh, maybe it wasn't a gunshot. Maybe somebody just dropped a bucket from a high up off a ledge. How stupid is that statement? Now, I don't know if the guy that said that, allegedly said that, was really that dumb, or if they just made this up. So what happened here? Yeah, he shot himself in the foot. He's in a wheelchair, all bandaged up. They say he was unslinging his shoulder bag when it caught on his holstered weapon, and when the gun fell, he tried to catch it. Let me make this abundantly and crystal clear. If you drop a gun, any gun, from any distance, regardless of what the scratches you may get on, do not try to catch that gun. Almost every, all your modern guns have at least one and sometimes multiple drop safeties on them. The chances of one of them going off when it hits the ground is really close to zero. Drop safeties are pretty good. And anything made from about, I don't know, probably mid-70s, early 80s, somewhere in there. And quite a few of them even before then. I mean, Ruger was one of the first ones to put something that was guaranteed without any possibility of it going off when they put their transfer bar safety in it. And that was, what, 1975, maybe? 72, I don't remember when it was. But you could drop, I've heard, I don't know how many people on the internet, on Facebook, whether they actually do it or not, or if they just say that on Facebook because they think they're cool. I carry my gun in the holster, safety off, like I always do. If your gun has a mechanical safety and you carry it with it off, chances are you're an idiot. If it has a manual safety, there's a reason for it. Now, people say, well, Glocks don't have manual safeties. Well, no, they don't. They're also double-action handguns. They take quite a bit farther to pull the trigger. Now, a lot of your double-action semi-automatics and revolvers do not have safeties. Most revolvers don't have safeties. There's a couple that do. So, you know, Glocks are not nearly the only semi-automatic that does not have a safety or a manual safety. And if you go to catch one of these, now the thing is, most of your, particularly your single actions, your 1911s and any of them, doesn't matter, Rugers, doesn't make any difference, Berettas, it can be a traditional double action and you can have it cocked and ready to go, and that means that the trigger is basically, to use the term very loosely, a hair trigger at that point. Where it only takes anywhere from, you know, 3 to maybe 6 pounds, and it only have to pull it, you know, a few thousandths of an inch. A nice, well-tuned 1911, you don't even pull the trigger a thousandths of an inch. I mean, you, if it's a well-tuned bullseye gun or something, you get on out to carry something like that with the safety off, you don't even pull it thousandths of an inch. You pull it thousandths of a hair of a inch or whatever. if it's a tradition, that's what I said, Doc. If it's a traditional double action, that's fine. In fact, they have a longer trigger pull than the Glock does. But what I said was if it's traditional double action, single action, and you have it cocked, and the safety off, if it has one, that is not like a Glock. Because the trigger only has to be touched instead of pulled. The Glock trigger stacks a little bit. And, you know, from the factory, there are 5.5, 6 pounds, which is more than the majority of the single action semi-automatics out there. There's some that's the same, but they don't stack like that. They only are touched, and pulled, you know, thousandths of an inch, ten thousandths of an inch, where the Glock has to be pulled, you know, like a quarter of an inch or whatever it is. So anyway, this guy probably, which is another point here, he said he was carrying a shoulder bag, and he went to take the shoulder bag off and pulled the gun out. So, two things. One of them, he probably didn't have any retention device on the holster. It was probably just, it may have even been a horizontal holster without a retention device, I don't know. Probably vertical. And that is why that, now I can tell you, if this guy was a federal agent, I can tell you right now, he probably did not work for the FBI. Because the FBI does not allow shoulder holsters for just anybody. You have to have special training, you have to have a special purpose, special permission to wear a shoulder. It's not like the movies. We've talked about this before. I don't know that other federal agencies have the same restrictions. But obviously, or pretty obviously to me, not guaranteed, he could have pulled it out of a belt holster, but it's doubtful. It was a shoulder bag he was undoing, so I kind of think that it was probably pulled it out of a shoulder holster, went to drop on the ground. He said, oh, no, how embarrassing is this going to be? I'm a federal agent. So he reaches out to grab it and pulls the trigger and shot himself in the foot. I'm the only one in this room professional enough to handle a Glock 40. Boom! Yeah, does that remind you of someone? Huh? I bet I've seen that video 8,000 times. Every time I get in a bad mood, every time I'm ticked off about something, I'll watch that video. Cracks me up every time. I don't care how bad a mood I'm in or how bad of a day I've had, how bad of a week I've had, I can watch that video, and it cracks me. And there again, I'm the only one in this room, Professor. That's like the guy saying, well, they contacted me to be an instructor. Shouldn't have been the other way around because I'm so good, because I was an 18 alpha. I doubt it. I really do. Oh, dear me. We are surrounded by them, no doubt about it. All right, let's move on down the line here and see what else we got. What time we got? Yeah, we still got some time. Some of you may have heard about the guy in, and then case in point here. We talked earlier about the insurance. Oh, you're going to go to jail. You're going to get investigated. You're going to lose this. You're going to have liability insurance. You know, you need to buy it from us because we're the best. We're the cheapest. That's not true. It's simply not true. You have as good a chance of going to jail in Arizona as you do anywhere if your shooting is not justified. You may have a little bit better chance in Arizona of not going to jail if it is justified. Some places you may go spend 24 hours in jail anyway. And even then, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be spending a bunch of money on a defense lawyer. It could mean that they just want to hold on to you for a little bit while they're doing an investigation. They let you out next morning and say, well, Mr. Green, have a nice day. We have no reason to hold you any longer. Here's your stuff. Get on down the road. Happens fairly frequently. This guy was in a Walgreens in Phoenix. You know, Arizona's getting its fair share of press here from civilians or, you know, citizens carrying guns here. That's a good thing. This was in Walgreens, and a witness there, a guy was watching a guy come in and jumped over the counter, pulled a gun, and told everybody, you know, don't make any noise, don't move, get on the floor, I'm robbing the place. And the guy shot him. And so the innocent bystander shot him, and he died. I said, okay, well, that's the way it goes. Guy was wearing a wig at the time. He had demanded some oxycodone from Walgreens, so there's a substantial part of the problem right there. The armed customer who shot the suspect is cooperating with police As they continue to investigate, no other injuries were reported. Let's see. No charges have been filed against the witness who shot the suspect. There you go. So Walgreens says they'll be releasing a statement soon because it doesn't comment on ongoing investigation. Now, what they're going to say, Walmart or Walgreens is going to say, hey, while this turned out good for us and we're happy it turned out this way, we want to make sure that everyone understands that we do not condone or expect citizens to take the law into their own hands. They're not going to come right out and say don't, but they're going to have to do something to cover their nuggets while they're when they get their statement made here. I can assure you they are not going to say, well, see how good that worked? Yeah, everybody ought to carry a gun. He saved our bacon right there. Ain't no telling how many people might have been shot. And plus stealing the money, plus stealing the oxycodone. Thank you, Mr. Concealed Carry Holder. I wish everybody did. No, that's not what they're going to say. They're going to say something that's pretty politically correct without coming out and saying we don't want you to bring guns in our place anymore. So, they may surprise me, but I doubt it. We'll see. I suspect it'll be, this is Wednesday, I suspect it'll be Friday to Monday somewhere. They'll come out with a statement on that, and I'll make sure that everybody gets that here. Let's see. Let me go back up here a little bit. graduate of the Tex Grebner School of Shooting. Yeah, this was, now Tex Grebner was just very ill-trained. He was doing what I insist that people don't do, is if you're going to change guns, particularly styles, actions, types, manufacturers of guns in the middle of the stream, then you take that gun and you empty it, double check it, make sure it's empty, and you do a few presentations, maybe in front of a mirror if you have one, or outside, doesn't matter. But you present that thing from the holster, you know, 10, 20 times. Take the safety off, bring the sights up like you're going to shoot, finger straight, after action, back in the holster. That's what he did not do. He changed holsters and changed guns, and all within minutes, and shot himself with his 1911 due to the type of holster that he was using. It's actually due to the type of training that he wasn't using, but I still blame, give a significant amount of the blame to the Blackhawk Serpa holsters. Serpa holsters are not allowed by a lot of different training facilities, and there's a reason for that. So, Yakima Glock, if your uncle had a Ruger Blackhawk go off from dropping it on the pavement, that gun was a pre-1975 gun. Either that or he'd been taken away. Well, there, I just don't see any possible way that you can put it together wrong and have it function at all. Now, the earlier ones, prior to 1975, if they had a round in the chamber there was, and they hit just right on the ground, I could virtually guarantee that it was going to go off. There was a reason all the old cowboys only carried five chambers full in their revolvers. There was lots and lots and lots of accidental shootings back in those days. I'll call them accidental shootings because in those days they didn't know any better as far as, what I mean is I wouldn't go as far as to call them negligent because the fine art of firearm safety had not been refined to that point yet. But after 1975 with the transfer bar safety, it ain't going to go off. Let me take that. Well, even if it's cocked, it's not going to go off. I guess one could argue if it was so filthy that something stuck in place when it dropped or so. I don't know how that would be possible with any Ruger revolver made after 1975. But I'll put that very minuscule disclaimer in there just in case. But even if it's cocked, unless they had the trigger tied back, well, we couldn't have the trigger tied back or it would have went off before he dropped it. So if it's cocked and even if the hammer falls, the hammer will fall harmlessly against the frame and it will not go off. Okay, what are we looking at for time here? Feel free, if anybody has the desire, feel free to use the donate button up in the top right-hand corner of the chat room up there. Help keep things moving here. I've told you about our new classroom in Lakeside. I've told you that we are making tons of Glock dry practice kits. I've got 45 of them sitting right here. I was supposed to ship them out the other day, and the guy didn't provide me a shipping address, which he gave me today, so they'll be going out tomorrow. And we're still getting, even though I've taken them off the website and closed the sales to civilians, basically, I'm still getting enough people call and email and whatnot that I am trying to supply those people when they contact me that way. Yeah, Yakima Glock, you betcha. You can drop Glock all day long. It's not going to fire. Let's see. Let me cruise on down here and check out the rest of the chat room here. Oh, Doc, you've been busy, haven't you? Yeah. It was pre-75 gun, okay. The yeah, Doc, you know, Bill Ruger had some issues with some of his politics back during the magazine ban and stuff, but I'll tell you what, that guy rates right up there, right at the top with John Browning and Samuel Colt. Look at the investment casting procedure that he perfected in the guns, the transfer bar safeties, the very rugged heavy duty frames of the Security 6 and the GP100 and the Red Hawks, even the Black Hawks. You know, when people want to go and make a super 975 Nitro Turbo Express handgun round, they use Ruger frames. They don't use Colt frames, and they don't use Smith & Wesson frames. They use Ruger frames. As far as I know, that is 100% true, just as far as I know. Now, there may be some out there that I'm not aware of. I'm not going to say that. But I helped Linebaugh. I helped Linebaugh move his, when he moved from Cody, Wyoming to, I think it was Marysville or Mary's something, Missouri. I took a backhoe down there and loaded up his lathes and all the stuff that he needed for, to continue his gunsmithing business. And a lot of the 475 line ball, the 500 line ball, there was a couple more. They were made out of single action Rugers, and they are extremely safe. They are extremely accurate. Are they as accurate as a Smith & Wesson 29 or 27, 28? Maybe not. Rugers take a lot of work for triggers. A lot. But is the Smith & Wesson or the Colt you know, the Python, fine revolver, very, very accurate, great triggers, or can be made great anyway. But will they take the abuse that a Ruger will? Not in your wildest fantasies. Not to any degree. The Ruger will take a hell of a licking and keep on ticking. And the only thing I have against them, which is kind of, and I shouldn't say against them, it's just one of the things that I don't like, are the triggers. There is no such thing as a good Ruger trigger out of the factory, except in a couple of rifles that they made. Their rifles are the same way, but they had a... I managed to get a hold of it. I kind of wish I had kept it. It was the 308. It was a law enforcement sniper rifle or whatever. It was not restricted in any way. And it had about a 2.5-pound trigger or something like that, 2-pound trigger, right out of the box. It did need smoothed up a little bit, but it was pretty dang nice. And that is the only Ruger that I've ever seen that had a what I consider a decent trigger. There's, you know, people's definition of decent triggers, just like definition of accuracy or definition of beautiful or whatever the case is. You know, everybody has a different definition of it. So by my definition, Ruger does not have the capacity to make a decent trigger. Well, I guess they do, because they proved it when they made that 308. But ordinarily, no. Everything else is substandard. Let's see here. What did I do? All right, let's start that over again. There we go. All right. Okay, I think we're going to ease on towards the door. Yeah, the GP100, yeah, they're decent triggers. You know, like I said, it just depends on what your idea of decent is. You know, if you, if you look at some of the, any of the Smith & Wesson revolvers, any of the, even new ones, all of them have better triggers than a Ruger out of the box. But Rugers can be made pretty nice. If you know what you're doing and take a little time, yeah, they can be made nice. Colt Python, velvet. A mixture of velvet and fine crystal. Don't know how to explain it. They're amazing, wonderful triggers. The Lawman was a good trigger, but not as good as the Python. Okay, as I said, I think we've had all the fun we can stand, so I'm going to get on out of here. Hopefully all things will go well. And we'll be around for Liberty Lounge Friday. I do have some commitments Friday afternoon that I have to do, but I should be back in plenty of time. We're getting got an event coming up Saturday locally, so I've got to take care of that. But that should not affect Liberty Lounge. So, all right. So I'm going to scoot on out of here, and we'll see y'all Friday night. And I really, really, really do appreciate y'all joining me.
that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me.
No explanation, no reconciliation.